My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
So I just figured it out. So if they were to expand the tournament to 72 teams from 68, you'd have 8 first four games involving 16 teams, and that would leave you with 64 on Thursday. Now, if they expand it to 76, it's a little bit more complicated. But the bottom line is, if you tell me you're going to expand by 4 teams and you're still going to be at 64 for Thursday, which I think most college basketball fans really view Thursday, Friday to be the first round. And fortunately, they got back to calling it the first round. Remember when they had first round being the first four, and then they called that the second round in the first couple of years after they expanded to 68. But as long as you get to 64 by Thursday, Denton, I think we're all good. If there were an, you know, if there were an extra, you know, couple of first four games, I don't think anybody's going to care. I just don't want it diluted to the point where you've got like 128. I'm not for that. You know, guys like Gary, I mean, our guy Gary Williams, Hall of Fame coach, Gary's advocated for a lot more teams. Boeheim at one point was advocating for almost everybody, I think. All right. Joining us right now is Adam Finkelstein. Adam is the director of scouting for 24/7 Sports. We're going to talk some NBA draft. But he's also a college basketball insider for CBS Sports. You can follow him on X on Twitter, at Adam Finkelstein. By the way, you just came in, and I was reading from this story that, you know, they're considering expanding the NCAA tournament again. You're a college basketball guy. Do you want that or not?
You know, I'd say I'm probably a little more open-minded to that than others. I think you hit the nail right on the head there. You don't want to, like, Thursday and Friday is the day where, like, you know, everybody says they're sick and they stay home from work and it's like the greatest day of the year, right? And you don't want to sacrifice any part of that. But I, if there's a way for Tuesday and Wednesday to add to some of that, you know, and make that period longer, I don't know. I'm not totally opposed to seeing what it looks like. I think some people are just very, very opposed to it. But I'm more open-minded, I would say.
We'll get to the draft here in a moment. But, you know, this used to be a sport that you could argue 20 years ago, or maybe it's longer than that now, was, you know, after the NFL and college football, right there, you know, among the most popular, and certainly in terms of viewers. And it's become a one-month-of-the-year sport, and NIL and transfer portal have made it, you know, almost, you know, impossible for coaches. And I'm just curious at what what you think the state of the sport is. And also, I wanted to get your thoughts on Danny Hurley staying. I thought that was huge for the sport.
Yeah, I think the sport itself is in a place where it needs some oversight. You know, I mean, NIL is running rampant, and there's really no rules. And when the NCAA tries to implement rules, somebody sues them. They've thus far been very successful in court, and so the rule becomes null and void. So I think it's clearly in a place where it needs oversight. I'm hoping it gets to the point where it's, you know, you just have collective bargaining and contracts and everything is above board right now, because now you have players who are allegedly signing NIL deals for sometimes millions of dollars, maybe even signing contracts, but those aren't public contracts. And so I think it's just in a unsustainable spot right now that's going to have to evolve.
All right, let's talk NBA draft. We get it in two nights, next Wednesday and Thursday of next week. This is a draft without a Victor Wembanyama, and there's really, you would agree, right? There's not a lot of buzz around this draft, but tell me what you think in terms of the quality of it. I mean, is there a player or two that you think could ultimately end up being a massive difference maker in an organization like Washington's?
I think there is. I just don't think we know who that player is yet, which is the the storyline of this draft. Because historically speaking, you can go back each and every year and there's an all-star to come out of the draft. Doesn't matter how bad the draft is. 2013 is kind of the worst draft in recent NBA history. And Giannis Antetokounmpo came out of that draft. Rudy Gobert came out of that draft too. Now, other than that, there wasn't too much. But each and every year, you find somebody, and you also find somebody like outside of the top three. You know, you get Draymond Green or Jalen Brunson or, you know, Devin Booker or whoever. These guys were all picked after 10, and that happens each and every
Kawhi
year.
Kawhi Leonard, Giannis, as you mentioned.
Yeah. So what makes this draft, I think, a little bit more confusing is that there's nobody at the top of the draft that scouts and evaluators are excited about. You mentioned Wemby, but not even like Wemby was what we would call like a tier one prospect. There's not even like a tier two guy here. You know what I mean? And so whoever goes number one or number two in normal years, they're somewhere probably after five, and that's somewhat conservative. But again, I do think history tells us there is someone in here somewhere who's got star potential. That potential just hasn't really revealed itself yet.
All right, so can we at least guess? I mean, when you say there's no tier two guy, I mean, forget that there's not the franchise changer like a Wembanyama, or like people thought about Zion, you know, when he came out. But you're saying that the tier two guys aren't in this draft. Like there's no Brandon Miller. There's no, you know, whomever you would consider to be tier two in recent years. So, I mean, that's a bad draft on paper going in.
It is. Yeah, no, 100%. It is a bad draft on paper. And I think what, especially in terms of star power, my caveat to that is that somebody is going to emerge who we're not expecting.
Of course.
Know? But the tier one and tier two prospects, they're the guys who have the most outward, the most obvious benchmarks for future success. It's not that they're certain stars. Even Wemby last year, there were people who said, like, hey, is his body gonna last? Is this a sustainable physical archetype? But I think that this year, when you have no one who has such overwhelming markers for future success, everything's a proposition, right? So it's high risk, high reward, or what are you looking for? And what are you willing to risk for it? And I think that's kind of the danger. Like for Washington and Atlanta and teams like that that pick at the top of the draft, I think one of the things that's challenging is that from ownership to fan bases, they're used to a certain return on that investment. And this year, chances are you're not going to get that return, and it's going to go down as like, oh, well, they messed that up, especially if you assume that some star is going to reveal himself in the teens or the 20s or the 30s someday that no one anticipated. I mean, if you talk to the people who drafted you know, Nikola Jokic in the second round. They will tell you they had a pick in the mid first round. They didn't take him because they had no idea he was going to be this good. But fans don't remember it that way. You know what I mean? So that's the danger of picking atop this draft is how it's going to be viewed in retrospect.
Yeah, like everybody can say almost, you know, like you just went through the list and we added to it. I mean, when the Wizards picked Jan Vesely in the 2011 draft and Kawhi Leonard went 15 overall, you still had teams like Milwaukee who took Jimmer Fredette, you know, five picks behind before Kawhi. You know, there are multiple big mistakes that are made in this draft. It really is. Don't you think, unless you have, you know, the true obvious transformational kind of superstar at the top of it, it's actually a bigger crapshoot than even the NFL draft is?
It is a crapshoot, and I think the amount of resources that are invested in this, not just in terms of like going out and scouting, but in by extension the basketball evaluation. But the amount of evaluation that goes into analyzing these prospects' minds and bodies is something that we don't talk a lot about, like the psychological assessments these guys have to do, the personality tests, the medical testing. So they are really digging in at every level conceivable, and yet still there are going to be mistakes and there are going to be surprises because it's a futures market. You're betting on something not next year, not even 2 years down the road, but what's somebody going to be 5-10 years from now?
All right, let's talk about this draft anyway, though we have no idea the one or two players that will ultimately be really, really good players, star players. But let's look at the Wizards at two. There are two French players that are mocked almost everywhere to go 1-2 in some order. Tell us about them and maybe another player or two that would be worthy at number two overall.
So I think there's probably three guys in the wheelhouse for the Wizards right now. The first is Alex Saar. Alex Saar has been the betting favorite to go number one in this draft. He's a 7-footer. He's originally from France, but he played this year in the NBL in Australia after playing the previous 2 years at Overtime Elite in Atlanta. And he is an exceptional mover for his size. He's fluid. He's graceful. He covers the court. That means he can be switchable defensively. It means he can fly around and make up ground in a hurry in defensive rotations. And the defensive end of the floor is where he has the highest upside. You've seen people like to compare him to someone like Evan Mobley, which I think is a good archetype to get in your mind. I'm not sure he's as naturally talented as Evan, but that's the type of player we're talking about. The questions are on the offensive end because this is someone who averaged, I think, 9 points a game this year in Australia. And he's very lean, he's skinny, and so people say, well, Wemby and Chet were skinny too. That's true, but he's not that level of talent. So you have this mobile but skinny 7-footer, and he's got to add some muscle and be able to play through contact to be able to be a finisher at the NBA level. And then you're really hoping the shooting clicks long term. I think that's the big bet on Alex Saar, but immediate impact defender from day one, some offensive upside that's just not quite there yet, and then he's got to get stronger. That's the quick scouting report on him. I think that is who Washington favors because when you look at the pieces they have, he can slot in with some of those other young guys and he can give you a defensive anchor and things can really start to develop from there. The good news, I think, for Washington is that there's kind of recent news that Atlanta and Saar may not be on the same page. Depending on who you ask, it might be Atlanta or it might be his representatives, but there seems to be some evidence that he's trending away from that number one spot, even though he has been the betting favorite in Vegas. The second guy, the other Frenchman you mentioned, is Zachary Richaud. And this is about a 6'8", 6'9", kind of 3-4, so wing combo forward, who shoots the ball really well from the perimeter. He's got a pretty looking shooting stroke and he can defend at a pretty high level. So he fits that kind of coveted 3-and-D archetype that has a definite role in the NBA, but he's not a creator. He's not the kind of offensive alpha that you usually see get drafted this high. Now he's getting some momentum to go to Atlanta right now as we think they're moving off of Saar. He's also got definite interest from San Antonio at four if he were to slip that far, and there's speculation that San Antonio could explore moving up to pair a shooting Frenchman with Wemby, because that makes sense on a couple of different levels. I think the third player that Washington fans need to be aware of is Donovan Clingan.
Right.
If Atlanta were to move that number one pick and someone else were to take Saar number one, that creates a situation where if Atlanta has to choose between Risa Shea and Clingan, they may say, you know what, we've already got young wings here. We just drafted a young wing last year, and we don't want to be redundant with this. And if you look at arguably the three players on our roster who may have a long-term future here with this club, they all play in the middle of the lineup. What we don't have is our big man of the future, and we don't have necessarily our point guard of the future. So those would be the best fits. I think that's the case if Saar goes one, for Washington to consider someone like Clingan at two, because he is that defensive anchor who's just got tremendous size. And again, some untapped offensive potential when you talk about a guy who's about 7'2", who can dribble, who can pass, and may even be able to shoot down the road.
Yeah, there's no doubt that Clingan, everybody saw him in the tournament and in the championship game and UConn's back-to-back. At 7'2", whatever he is, because he's a large man, I think he's more fluid, more mobile than maybe people even understand. But my question to you is, as you described what Atlanta might do, if the draft is what you say it is, why would somebody come up to number one? Why would there be any interest in jumping up to number one? Is Saar's potential at 7'1", and being a guy that could potentially defend and develop something offensively, is it just that, you know, projection that somebody might think that can happen?
Well, because we're very literally trying to predict the future, different teams and even different voices inside the same team are going to have different opinions. And so some people might have a very different long-term projection for Saar than others. Same for every prospect in this draft. Some of it's situational, about like the style of play they utilize. So for example, Clayton is going to be much more valuable for a team that believes in utilizing a drop coverage defensive scheme in terms of how they defend ball screens. If you want to get out and hard hedge or trap ball screens, Donovan Clingan's probably not your guy. There's lots of different variables, but again, it comes down to the fact that different people and different organizations have different opinions. And the other thing too is some of them, especially when you look at teams like San Antonio, teams like New York, teams like Oklahoma City, they have so many future assets that they can afford to allocate some to move up. So I'll give you a hypothetical. One of the things that's been people have wondered about is, if San Antonio really covets Risa Shea, could they move up and try and deal with Atlanta? And people have said, well, okay, San Antonio has the 4 and 8 picks, but you know what else they have? They have Atlanta's pick next year. So they could say, hey, we'll swap 4 and 1, and then we'll give you back your pick for next year. So there's lots of different scenarios there. But I think like the amount of assets the team has in their war chest, so to speak, also impacts how aggressive they can afford to be to move up and take a swing on somebody if they really believe in the upside.
We're talking to Adam Finkelstein from 24/7 Sports. He also does work for CBS Sports. I got a minute left here. I wanted just your quick opinion on a couple of players. Can Dalton Connect be a big-time scorer at the NBA level and
Absolutely.
Creator?
The question is whether he's going to be a bad defender or a marginal defender, because he's not going to be a good defender. But yes, I think he can be a good scorer, though.
What about Zach Edey? Where is his draft projection? And I know I've seen a lot of videos of him out there shooting threes, and he actually does not have a bad stroke at all, I don't think. But what are the NBA guys projecting Zach Edey to be at the NBA level?
There's a wide range of opinions on Edey, but the quick hitter is everything I just said about Clingan being system specific is even more so for Edey, because he's got to play at a slower tempo. He's got to play exclusively drop coverage. And he's got to play for somebody who's willing to throw it into the post a little bit, which not every NBA team does. So if he gets in a setting where they do all those things, I think his upside is higher, but it's very system specific.
All right, give me a player. We both admit that, you know, who the hell knows. But somebody's going to come out of this draft that we're going to point to and say, you know, he went 12th or he went 9th or he went 17th or he was in the second round like Jokic or Draymond. Give me the player that you're actually telling people that you're excited about and you think's got a chance.
The top one on my board is Ron Holland. He finished as the number one high school player in the country last year. He's a big 6'7" wing. He's one of the most competitive players in this draft. He's a high-level athlete. He gets after it defensively. People are concerned about the shooting, but it's not broken, and it's been trending in the right direction the last couple of years, and I just refuse to bet against a hyper-competitive, big-time athlete who plays both ends of the floor and keeps getting better.
You just convinced me because you talked about all the intangible stuff, and that's a big part of it is looking for that guy who's a badass competitor. Thanks, Adam. Really appreciate it. Good stuff. Adam Finkelstein, everybody, 24/7 Sports. We are done for the day. Thanks to Adam. Thanks to Greg Wyshynski. Thanks to Nate Davis, who all joined us on the show. Who's up next?
It is the Rooster, cock-a-doodle-doo.
Chris Russell back in his chair next, right after a couple of commercials, but just a few. Hang in there for Rooster. Back tomorrow.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
So I just figured it out. So if they were to expand the tournament to 72 teams from 68, you'd have 8 first four games involving 16 teams, and that would leave you with 64 on Thursday. Now, if they expand it to 76, it's a little bit more complicated. But the bottom line is, if you tell me you're going to expand by 4 teams and you're still going to be at 64 for Thursday, which I think most college basketball fans really view Thursday, Friday to be the first round. And fortunately, they got back to calling it the first round. Remember when they had first round being the first four, and then they called that the second round in the first couple of years after they expanded to 68. But as long as you get to 64 by Thursday, Denton, I think we're all good. If there were an extra, you know, couple of first four games, I don't think anybody's going to care. I just don't want it diluted to the point where you've got like 128. I'm not for that. You know, guys like Gary, I mean, our guy Gary Williams, Hall of Fame coach, Gary's advocated for a lot more teams. Boeheim at one point was advocating for almost everybody, I think. All right. Joining us right now is Adam Finkelstein. Adam is the director of scouting for 24/7 Sports. We're going to talk some NBA draft. But he's also a college basketball insider for CBS Sports. You can follow him on X on Twitter, at Adam Finkelstein. By the way, you just came in, and I was reading from this story that, you know, they're considering expanding the NCAA tournament again. You're a college basketball guy. Do you want that or not?
You know, I'd say I'm probably a little more open-minded to that than others. I think you hit the nail right on the head there. You don't want to, like, Thursday and Friday is the day where, like, you know, everybody says they're sick and they stay home from work and it's like the greatest day of the year, right? And you don't want to sacrifice any part of that. But if there's a way for Tuesday and Wednesday to add to some of that, you know, and make that period longer, I don't know. I'm not totally opposed to seeing what it looks like. I think some people are just very, very opposed to it, but I'm more open-minded, I would say.
We'll get to the draft here in a moment, but, you know, this used to be a sport that you could argue 20 years ago, or maybe it's longer than that now, was, you know, after the NFL and college football, right there, you know, among the most popular, and certainly in terms of viewers. And it's become a one-month of the year sport, and NIL and transfer portal have made it, you know, almost, you know, impossible for coaches. And I'm just curious at what you think the state of the sport is. And also, I wanted to get your thoughts on Danny Hurley staying. I thought that was huge for the sport.
Yeah, I think the sport itself is in a place where it needs some oversight. You know, I mean, NIL is running rampant, and there's really no rules. And when the NCAA tries to implement rules, somebody sues them. They've thus far been very successful in court, and so the rule becomes null and void. So I think it's clearly in a place where it needs oversight. I'm hoping it gets to the point where it's, you know, you just have collective bargaining and contracts and everything is above board right now, because now you have players who are allegedly signing NIL deals for sometimes millions of dollars, maybe even signing contracts, but those aren't public contracts. And so I think it's just in a unsustainable spot right now that's going to have to evolve.
All right, let's talk NBA draft. We get it in two nights, next Wednesday and Thursday of next week. This is a draft without a Victor Wembanyama, and there's really, you would agree, right? There's not a lot of buzz around this draft, but tell me what you think in terms of the quality of it. I mean, is there a player or two that you think could ultimately end up being a massive difference maker in an organization like Washington's?
I think there is. I just don't think we know who that player is yet, which is the... Yeah. You know, which is the storyline of this draft, because historically speaking, you can go back each and every year and there's an all-star to come out of the draft. Doesn't matter how bad the draft is. 2013 is kind of the worst draft in recent NBA history, and Giannis Antetokounmpo came out of that draft. Rudy Gobert came out of that draft too. Now, other than that, there wasn't too much. But each and every year, you find somebody, and you also find somebody like outside of the top three. You know, you get Draymond Green or Jalen Brunson or, you know, Devin Booker or whoever. These guys were all picked after 10, and that happens each and every year.
Kawhi Leonard, Giannis, as you mentioned.
Yeah. So what makes this draft, I think, a little bit more confusing is that there's nobody at the top of the draft that scouts and evaluators are excited about. You mentioned Wemby. But not even like Wemby was what we would call like a tier one prospect. There's not even like a tier two guy here. You know what I mean? And so whoever goes number one or number two in normal years, they're somewhere probably after five. And that's somewhat conservative. But again, I do think history tells us there is someone in here somewhere who's got star potential. That potential just hasn't really revealed itself yet.
All right, so can we at least guess? I mean, when you say there's no tier two guy, I mean, forget that there's not the, you know, the franchise changer like a Wembanyama. or like people thought about Zion, you know, when he came out. But you're saying that the tier two guys aren't in this draft. Like, there's no Brandon Miller. There's no, you know, whomever you would consider to be tier two in recent years. So, I mean, that's a bad draft on paper going in.
It is. Yeah, no, 100%. It is a bad draft on paper. And I think what, especially in terms of star power, my kind of, you know, my caveat to that is that somebody is going to emerge who we're not expecting.
Of course.
You know? But the tier one and tier two prospects, they're the guys who have the most outward, the most obvious benchmarks for future success. It's not that they're certain stars. Even Wemby last year, there were people who said, like, hey, is his body gonna last? Is this a sustainable physical archetype? But I think that this year, when you have no one who has such overwhelming markers for future success, everything's a proposition, right? So it's high risk, high reward, or what are you looking for? And what are you willing to risk for it? And I think that's kind of the danger. Like for Washington and Atlanta and teams like that that pick at the top of the draft, I think one of the things that's challenging is that from ownership to fan bases, they're used to a certain return on that investment. And this year, chances are you're not going to get that return, and it's going to go down as like, oh, well, they messed that up, especially if you assume that some star is going to reveal himself in the teens or the 20s or the 30s someday that no one anticipated. I mean, if you talk to the people who drafted, you know, Nikola Jokic in the second round, they will tell you they had a pick in the mid first round. They didn't take him because they had no idea he was going to be this good. But fans don't remember it that way. You know what I mean? So that's the danger of picking atop this draft is you know, how it's going to be viewed in retrospect.
Yeah, like everybody can say almost, you know, like you just went through the list and we added to it. I mean, when the Wizards picked Jan Vesely in the 2011 draft and Kawhi Leonard went 15 overall, you still had teams like Milwaukee who took Jimmer Fredette, you know, five picks behind before Kawhi. You know, there are multiple big mistakes that are made in this draft. It really is, don't you think, unless you have, you know, the true obvious transformational kind of superstar at the top of it, it's actually a bigger crapshoot than even the NFL draft is.
It is a crapshoot, and I think the amount of resources that are invested in this, not just in terms of like going out and scouting, but in by extension the basketball evaluation, but the amount of evaluation that goes into analyzing these prospects' minds and bodies is something that we don't talk a lot about, like the psychological assessments these guys have to do, the personality tests, the medical testing. So they are really digging in at every level conceivable, and yet still there are going to be mistakes and there are going to be surprises because it's a futures market. You're betting on something not next year, not even 2 years down the road, but what's somebody going to be 5-10 years from now?
All right, let's talk about this draft anyway, though we have no idea the one or two players that will ultimately be really, really good players, star players. But let's look at the Wizards at two. There are two French players that are mocked almost everywhere to go 1-2 in some order. Tell us about them and maybe another player or two that would be worthy at number two overall.
So I think there's probably three guys in the wheelhouse for the Wizards right now. The first is Alex Saar. Alex Saar has been the betting favorite to go number one in this draft. He's a 7-footer. He's originally from France, but he played this year in the NBL in Australia after playing the previous 2 years at Overtime Elite in Atlanta. And he is an exceptional mover for his size. He's fluid. He's graceful. He covers the court. That means he can be switchable defensively. It means he can fly around and make up ground in a hurry in defensive rotations. And the defensive end of the floor is where he has the highest upside. You've seen people like to compare him to someone like Evan Mobley, which I think is a good archetype to get in your mind. I'm not sure he's as naturally talented as Evan, but that's the type of player we're talking about. The questions are on the offensive end because this is someone who averaged, I think, 9 points a game this year in Australia. And he's very lean. He's skinny. And so people say, well, Wemby and Chet were skinny too. That's true, but he's not that level of talent. So you have this mobile but skinny 7-footer, and he's got to add some muscle and be able to play through contact to be able to be a finisher at the NBA level. And then you're really hoping the shooting clicks long term. I think that's the big bet on Alex Saar. But immediate impact defender from day one, some offensive upside that's just not quite there yet, and then he's got to get stronger. That's the quick scouting report on him. I think that is who Washington favors, because when you look at the pieces they have, he can slot in with some of those other young guys, and he can give you a defensive anchor, and things can really start to develop from there. The good news, I think, for Washington is that there's kind of recent news that Atlanta and Saar may not be on the same page. Depending on who you ask, it might be Atlanta or it might be his representatives, but there seems to be some evidence that he's trending away from that number one spot, even though he has been the betting favorite in Vegas. The
okay.
second guy, the other Frenchman you mentioned, is Zachary Risacher. And this is about a 6'8", 6'9", kind of 3-4, so wing combo forward, who shoots the ball really well from the perimeter. He's got a pretty looking shooting stroke, and he can defend at a pretty high level. So he fits that kind of coveted 3-and-D archetype that has a definite role in the NBA. But he's not a creator. He's not the kind of offensive alpha that you usually see get drafted this high. Now he's getting some momentum to go to Atlanta right now, as we think they're moving off of Saar. He's also got definite interest from San Antonio at 4 if he were to slip that far, and there's speculation that San Antonio could explore moving up to pair a shooting Frenchman with Wemby, because that makes sense on a couple of different levels. I think the third player that Washington fans need to be aware of is Donovan Clingan.
Right.
If Atlanta were to move that number one pick and someone else were to take Saar number one, that creates a situation where if Atlanta has to choose between Risacher and Clingan, they may say, you know what, we've already got young wings here. We just drafted a young wing last year, and we don't want to be redundant with this. And if you look at arguably the three players on our roster who may have a long-term future here with this club, they all play in the middle of the lineup. What we don't have is our big man of the future, and we don't have necessarily our point guard of the future. So those would be the best fits. I think that's the case if Saar goes one, for Washington to consider someone like Clingan at 2, because he is that defensive anchor who's just got tremendous size. And again, some untapped offensive potential when you talk about a guy who's about 7'2", who can dribble, who can pass, and may even be able to shoot down the road.
Yeah, there's no doubt that Clingan, everybody saw him in the tournament and in the championship game and UConn's back-to-back. At 7'2", whatever he is, because he's a large man, I think he's more fluid, more mobile than maybe people even understand. But my question to you is, as you described what Atlanta might do, if the draft is what you say it is, why would somebody come up to number one? Why would there be any interest in jumping up to number one? Is Saar's potential at 7-1, you know, and it's you know, and being a guy that could potentially defend and develop something offensively, is it just that, you know, projection that somebody might think that can happen?
Well, because we're very literally trying to predict the future, different teams and even different voices inside the same team are going to have different opinions. And so some people might have a very different long-term projection for Saar than others. Same for every prospect in this draft. Some of it's situational, about like the style of play they utilize. So, for example, Clayton is going to be much more valuable for a team that believes in utilizing a drop coverage defensive scheme in terms of how they defend ball screens. If you want to get out and hard hedge or trap ball screens, Donovan Clingan's probably not your guy. There's lots of different variables, but again, it comes down to the fact that different people in different organizations have different opinions. And the other thing too is some of them, especially when you look at teams like San Antonio, teams like New York, teams like Oklahoma City, they have so many future assets that they can afford to allocate some to move up. So I'll give you a hypothetical. One of the things that's been people have wondered about is if San Antonio really covets Reese Hoshea, could they move up and try and deal with Atlanta? And people have said, well, okay, San Antonio has the 4 and 8 picks, but you know what else they have? They have Atlanta's pick next year. So they could say, hey, we'll swap 4 and 1 and then we'll give you back your pick for next year. So there's lots of different scenarios there, but I think like the amount of assets the team has in their war chest, so to speak, also impacts how aggressive they can afford to be, to move up and take a swing on somebody if they really believe in the upside.
We're talking to Adam Finkelstein from 24/7 Sports. He also does work for CBS Sports. I got a minute left here. I wanted just your quick opinion on a couple of players. Can Dalton Connect be a big-time scorer at the NBA level and
Absolutely.
Creator?
Absolutely. The question is whether he's going to be a bad defender or a marginal defender, because he's not going to be a good defender. But, yes, I think he can be a good scorer, though.
What about Zach Edey? Where is his draft projection? And I know I've seen a lot of videos of him out there shooting threes, and he actually does not have a bad stroke at all, I don't think. But what are the NBA guys projecting Zach Edey to be at the NBA level?
There's a wide range of opinions on Edey, but the quick hitter is everything I just said about clinging being system specific is even more so for Edey, because he's got to play at a slower tempo. He's got to play exclusively drop coverage, and he's got to play for somebody who's willing to throw it into the post a little bit, which not every NBA team does. So if he gets in a setting where they do all those things, I think his upside is higher, but it's very system specific.
All right, give me a player. We both admit that, you know, who the hell knows. But somebody's going to come out of this draft that we're going to point to and say, you know, he went 12th, or he went 9th, or he went 17th, or he was in the second round like Jokic or Draymond. Give me the player that you're actually telling people that you're excited about and you think's got a chance.
The top one on my board is Ron Holland. He finished as the number one high school player in the country last year. He's a big 6'7" wing. He's one of the most competitive players in this draft. He's a high-level athlete. He gets after it defensively. People are concerned about the shooting, but it's not broken, and it's been trending in the right direction the last couple of years, and I just refuse to bet against a hyper-competitive, big-time athlete who plays both ends of the floor and keeps getting better.
You just convinced me, because you talked about all the intangible stuff, and that's a big part of it, is looking for that guy who's a badass competitor. Thanks, Adam. Really appreciate it. Good stuff. Adam Finkelstein, everybody, 24/7 Sports. We are done for the day. Thanks to Adam. Thanks to Greg Wyshynski. Thanks to Nate Davis, who all joined us on the show. Who's up next?
It is the Rooster, cock-a-doodle-doo.
Chris Russell back in his chair next, right after a couple of commercials, but just a few. Hang in there for Rooster. Back tomorrow.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
Oh, it's such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
And a minimal salary cap hit. Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too. What,
you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norse sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.